Blog Talk Radio.
It's amazing, I'm the reason everybody fired up this evening. I'm exhausted, barely breathing, holding on to what I believe in.
Good evening, everybody. This is the Knicks at Night podcast. I'm your host, Sean Aquino. You can follow me on Twitter at SAQUINO34. My buddy Peter Arturi, my buddy Greg Armstrong. You guys are all there tonight. How are you guys doing? Pete, you there?
Me?
Yeah, Frank? Welcome to the podcast. You guys on? Pete, Frank?
I'm here, man. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I had some technical difficulties starting it up for some reason, but I think we're all there. Everybody there? Hey, Greg, are you on?
Yeah, I'm on.
All right.
Oh, beautiful.
Sounds good.
All right. Okay, we're on. Let's do this. All right, this is the Knicks of the Night podcast, everyone. I'm Sean Aquino, Greg Armstrong, Peter Arturi. We are here tonight to discuss, of course, as always, New York Knicks basketball. We usually do this every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific time. Last night, Frank Nutt and Tom Boffa owned the airwaves. They had New York Post writer Mark Berman on last night. Spent a good half hour with him. You guys could download or subscribe to the Knicks at Night podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. So be sure to do that so that you don't miss a show if you can't listen in. Tonight, we're just going to cover the last couple of Knicks games, take a look at possible starting lineups for the future come the regular season. Looks like Porzingis is going to start at the four. And then in the final half hour of a one-hour program, we'll get into our Western Conference and Eastern Conference previews. Basically, we're going to try to predict the top eight seeds in each conference. So that's pretty much the itinerary for tonight. So let's get right into it. I'm going to start with you, Greg. How you doing today, man?
Doing good, man. I'm just relaxing. Everything's good. You know, it's an exciting time here in New York. I'm sure you know, being that you're out there in L.A. and the New York Mets just dispatched the Los Angeles Dodgers in the Major League Baseball playoffs. So, you know, watching a little bit of that, just chilling.
Cool. How about yourself, Pete? How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm just hanging out and watching a little bit of the Mets game and get ready to talk to you guys, getting ready for a nice season coming up, hopefully.
Definitely. Yeah, well, I'm out here in L.A. You guys are both in New York, and I had a bunch of buddies that went to the decisive game between the Mets and the Dodgers, and they came back and they reported to me just how dead silent Dodger Stadium was, even though there were a good number of Mets fans there. But, man, for that final out, it was deafening. So I have secondhand recollection of how that went. So congratulations to all you Mets fans out there in Knickland that are listening in tonight. So, okay, let's get into it. The last contest for the Knicks was last week, actually, on the weekend. The Knicks played the Charlotte Hornets in Charlotte, a loss because basically the Knicks started, they started off without Carmelo, Kyle O'Quinn, Calderon didn't play. And then in the fourth quarter, they had a four-point lead, and then they lost it because they put in, a lot of the guys vying for that last spot, Thanasis, Travis Trice, Summers, Gary Atkins played a little bit towards the end there. So Porzingis started the game, and I think Porzingis finished 3 of 11. So let me start with you, Pete. Let's kind of briefly discuss that game against the Hornets. Are you concerned at all, or is it just preseason basketball, about the performance of Porzingis in that game? And also, what did you think about the guys all vying for the last last roster spot? Most likely it would be Thanasis, but do you think any of the other guys made a point to be considered to take Thanasis's spot in the 15th roster spot?
Well, I mean, first of all, the game, through three quarters, the Knicks stayed with every team they played so far. I mean, especially this last team, even though a lot of the guys didn't play, they still stayed with those teams. They're showing that they have toughness, and this is something they haven't had in a little while. And I like the way Fisher handles the team. I like the way the things that he's saying. I like the fact that he keeps guys in their spots, in their positions, in their time slots. I like that. I think that's smart. Instead of shuffling guys around and saying, well, you're not going to start tonight, so this guy is going to elevate. Instead, he just keeps O'Quinn in his spot, that kind of thing. This last game was tough to handle because a lot of guys didn't play. Porzingis didn't have a great night, but, you know, the thing with Porzingis that he can pick and pop all night. And to be honest with you, if he got the ball 10 times, he could hit 6 of those 10 shots, 5 of those 10 shots, just jumpers. I mean, this guy can average this year 14, 15 points a game. If he just hits jumpers and gets fouled a couple times and goes to the line, I think he easily scored 14 points. As far as the 15th man, you know, to me, I don't want to bank on a 15th guy, obviously. If you're playing a 15th guy, then you're in trouble. But we all have our fan favorites. We always do. For all these couple of years we've been talking, we always had our fan favorites. I would just say Thanasis, and I would just say it by default. The guy gave up a lot of money last year. Let's invest another year in him and give him, you know, the opportunity to sit on the bench and be a great cheerleader, because he's a very positive person, and see how he develops. So there's no point of letting him just go after a year of investment. So he would be my 15th guy, but it's not that important to me at this point who's the 15th guy.
How about yourself, Greg? What do you think?
I'm pretty much going to go along with that. Thanasis, he made the sacrifice last year in the D-League, spent the whole year down there, and he made some improvements, I thought, you know, watching some of the D-League games. But watching him the other night, he was like kind of wild. I was like, wow, he needs to really kind of tone it down for an NBA game, you know, type situation. But, you know, he hasn't got a lot of playing time in the preseason, so I could imagine he was jacked up getting into a game. So, you know, let's ride with him. Let's give him a shot. And they could always assign him during the season and send him back, you know, to Westchester, if they feel that, you know, he's not getting enough, you know, court time where he can, you know, progress even more. The game itself, DeAnthony Early was my star of the game. I mean, I thought, you know, he did a really nice job. You know, he played really well, getting out on the break. I mean, using his quickness, that's something that I think that he could do more. I mean, he's built like a gazelle. And, you know, on a few occasions, he was able to, you know, start an early fast break and just get out and beat everybody up the court, you know, for a fast break. So good to see him have two straight games, you know, good, you know, coming off the game that he had in the Garden against Philadelphia where he was terrible, in my opinion. But, you know, that's something that he needs to do, try to work on his consistency. You know, this is a make-or-break year for him. Last year was pretty much a bad year for him. He had a lot of injuries that kind of curtailed his progress. So he needs to try to get some consistency going. So it was good to see him string two good games back-to-back. Even though it was preseason, that's something that he needs for his confidence going into the season. And also, Derek Williams, once again, Derek Williams was fantastic. I mean, this guy is acting like a point a minute. You know, I mean, you know, that's something that if he could continue this, you know, going into the season, if he could be that kind of energy type of guy coming off the bench, sort of like J.R. Smith was, where he can come in and, you know, get some, you know, some quick points for us. His athletic ability is off the charts, you know, as we can see. And maybe this is just the right situation for him. Sometimes these guys, they go to a team like Sacramento, a losing situation, you know, and, you know, maybe this is finally the situation where Phil Jackson put some trust in him, said, look, we want you. I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. I'm going to give you a nice contract. Just relax, come here, and just do what you're capable of doing. You know, you were picked number two in the draft for a reason. So he was another standout during that Charlotte game. And at the end of the game, you know, they put in the end of the bench guys. And the one guy that really stood out to me was Trice. What's his name? Travis Trice?
Yeah.
He looked like he has potential to be an NBA player. You know, I mean, he's on the small side, but he seemed like he knows how to run an offense. You know, he's got some quickness. He can penetrate. So he's a guy that I would like to get a look at going forward. Maybe we could stash him in Westchester for the year. That's my hope, you know, and kind of work with him. The other guy that had Summers, he was bugging out. That guy was shooting.
Yeah, man, you're right.
Yeah, so I was not impressed with him. So, but basically,
either,
that's it. You know, that was my take on the Charlotte game. We got one more preseason game to go. I can't wait to get this game over with so we can get on with the regular season.
Yeah, I agree.
Great summary. Mm-hmm. I think I couldn't agree with more with each of your points. And Matt, I am so happy to see Clay Anthony Early doing as well as he's doing. Defensively, I see him out there. I think against Philly, he had two block shots against the Hornets. He had at least one block. He's staying up on his man. He looks so much more confident. You could tell it's his health and a little bit more understanding of the system. And he's attacking on the open floor, which is great because now we have that small forward that can attack behind Derek Williams or playing alongside. Both Williams and Early can play a little four. I know Early's a little small still. He's been getting some more maps, but guys that are long enough to play either position, and Early's been taking it direct, which I like. I just want him to get a more consistent outside jump shot, which he showed in one game hitting a couple of threes. So if Early can get up to that 35 to 40% level from three, play solid defense, and be a solid open floor player, then he could be a great 3-and-D option moving forward. And that's all he needs to do as a second-round pick. But, yeah, that's excellent. I mean, the development we've seen in Early has been terrific. What do you think about Early so far, Pete?
Yeah, I mean, I really think Derek Fisher needs some credit and just the way he's handling the rotations and telling guys what he wants out of them. You know, I think Anthony is going to be a part of a second unit, maybe not second unit A, but maybe a smaller second unit of B, where they're going to push the ball and they're going to run. And I'm pretty positive he has told Clay Anthony, when you're on the court, I want you to run. You know, I mean, he look at him go. I mean, he's fast. You don't realize how his legs move quick. He covers a lot of ground quickly, and he goes right to the rack. And you know, a lot of teams, good teams, need two style paces, you know, two different pace teams. And we're going to have a half-court triangle, and we're going to see pick and rolls, and then we're going to see a second unit that's going to come in running gun, kind of with Derek Williams, who is going to probably be the option on the second unit. And he can run as well. He's explosive. Clay Anthony's explosive. You know, and then you got the two guards. Definitely. I mean, I really think that Derek Fisher, I know it's just preseason. I'm not getting ahead of myself. You know, I've been down that road before, and things don't work out. But I really think that he's handled this rotation totally differently this year. And just, like I said before in the beginning of the show, how he has guys playing certain minutes, and he's not deviated from that at all. He's really just kept them where they should be. He kept Derek Williams where he should be instead of starting him when he could have the other night. I mean, just the way he's doing stuff and handling stuff, he's using them in their rotations properly. And that's the key.
Yeah.
I really think that the guys know where they're going to play, what they want, what the coach wants from them, and where they're going to be. And they get a comfort level. And I think that's important. And Clay Anthony is the product of that.
All right. I think you – thank you for doing that in terms of giving Fisher the props, because my one point I want to make briefly, and Greg, you could chime in after – is that even though Sasa Vujacic is starting at the two guard, a lot of fans are up in arms about it. Hey, they should start Galloway or Grant. I get the point, but I think it's a testament to how the roles of our players are going to be, in the sense of Afala is going to be the shooting guard. So Afala, watch Sasha, because he knows that position better than anyone else on the team. See where he goes? That's where we want you to go on the offense. So you can learn from that. And then he wants Grant and Galloway to play together to gather that chemistry so that I think that they're going to be the team, that they're going to be the backcourt for the second unit.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great match of Grant and Galloway. I know that a lot of Knicks fans are trying to push that Grant should start. But to me, Grant, he's looked great. But I think that, you know, you've got to still give him some time, maybe 15, 20 games in the season. Something happens, Calderon gets hurt, he comes in, he'll be more prepared, he'll be ready to go. And I think just sometimes you got to take that time with these players and allow them to learn. And I just think that you know, Fisher's doing a good job of being patient, and the same thing with Early, because you know Early or Williams are going to be that long, small forward that could do, you know, that could attack on the open floor and hit open shots when they become available.
Yeah.
So I agree with you 100%. Greg,
yeah,
what do you think?
But even, like, look
sorry,
at, like,
sorry.
All right, so, like, say Vucevic, right, stepped in for a follow. That's really,
right.
really the answer it was because he wants Grant and Galloway to come off the bench and be a part of that unit. That's going to be their positions this year, to be the second unit, come off the bench. And same
yeah.
thing with Lance Thomas. He plugged in Lance Thomas when Porzingis didn't play. He easily could have elevated O'Quinn or Derek, but he didn't. He used Lance Thomas,
right.
probably not going to play at all. At worst, he'll play, you know, garbage minutes. And he, you know, he's keeping guys in their positions at their time slots. And I think that's very smart. I think that's not being talked about. And I think it should be talked about. I mean, he's really handled this preseason very well.
No, that is a good point. That is a good point, especially when you realize, I mean, last year, I mean, he was all over the place with his lineups. He was like,
oh,
yeah. day, somebody, you know, somebody was in, then the next day he was out, somebody else was in. So the players could never really get comfortable because they didn't know what their roles were from one game to the next. So, you know,
right.
that's a good point, though, Pete. You know, by keeping these guys slotted, you know, you're going to be the bench guy. You're going to be the key reserves. We want you to get comfortable coming off the bench. So I'm not going to start you just because somebody's hurt,
mm-hmm.
you know, and throw that out of whack. I want you to, you know, keep the mindset you're going to be coming off the bench.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. It's nice to watch.
Good stuff. Now let's talk about, another interesting aspect, I guess on the downside, something that I've seen, and hopefully he's going to get better. I don't think it's a big deal, but I know Seraphin missed a couple days due to a knee injury. Berman reported that he had an arthroscopic scope two seasons ago. He looks like he's may have gained some weight. I don't know. What do you guys think of Seraphin? He looked good before, you know, the first two preseason games before he took some games off. What are your impressions on Seraphin? Are you guys concerned at all?
I'm not concerned. I mean, he's another big guy that's going to be in the mix. I mean, he could probably use to drop a few pounds. He looks a little heavy. That you know, I will say that. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, he's a veteran. He's been in the league for a few years now. I'm sure he knows this is an opportunity for him. So I'm expecting him to be able to be one of the bigs that we can rely on to come off the bench and contribute a little bit. You know, he's aggressive, which I like. He's kind of like in the mold of O'Quinn, you know, physical, big, burly type player, you know, something that we lacked the last couple of years. So I think he'll be okay. He's probably just still rounding his way into shape.
Yeah, I agree with Greg. And first of all, it allows the Knicks to stay big when Lopez comes out, if you need to stay big. And that's a
right.
great thing. It adds major depth. Is he going to get a lot of time? I don't know. I don't know if he'll get a lot of time. But, you know, look, he's French. Those French guys are always a little bit heavy. Kind of Boris Diaw, he was a little bit heavy. But look what he did for the Spurs that year. I think he can be a valuable player on this team. I mean, he was pretty decent on Washington, a solid backup, if not a third stringer. And he's going to get his chance, and hopefully he can give you a solid 10 minutes a game if needed. I mean, everyone's got to play their role. That's the way I look at it. I mean, if Anthony gets 10
yeah.
minutes, he's got to utilize that 10 minutes. You know,
totally,
these guys
yeah.
like each other. You can see they like each other, and you can see the chemistry. And I don't want to say I have a great feeling about this year, but, I mean, right now the feeling is good. I think everybody
right.
has accepted their roles.
Yeah, let's get right into it. You're talking about roles. Let's talk about the projected starting lineup that's been reported through various media outlets. Maybe we could talk about that and then see what you guys would do differently. And then after that, we'll get into the bench guys and which bench guys you think should play as a combination. We'll talk about how many minutes you think each guy should get. So let's go first off by talking about, it looks like the starting lineup is going to be Calderon, Afalo, Carmelo, Porzingis, and Lopez. Would you guys all agree with that starting lineup right there?
Yeah, I do.
Me, myself, I think I told you guys, I wanted O'Quinn start and bring Porzingis along slowly. That was my first impression. But I'm okay with Porzingis starting. I mean, I think he's going to be fine. He showed that, you know, he looks like he'll be able to handle, you know, the pressure of being starting right away as a rookie in the NBA. But I'm just a little bit worried about him still getting stronger, getting some strength, and a few injuries that he had in the preseason. But I'm okay with that lineup.
But look at O'Quinn. Look at O'Quinn, though, coming off the bench. What he's done in his preseason, playing 20 minutes a game. He's done really, really well. You know, and it looks like Fisher wants him in that spot. So definitely wouldn't elevate him at this point. Maybe right off the bat he could have done it. But now that he's already set in his ways, then I would stick to this. And Gleb Porzingis has developed. He's going to get in foul trouble. Guys are going to take it to him, but that's okay.
I mean, you could argue that O'Quinn has outplayed for the position. If there was a open competition and you want to judge it based on performance, I would say that O'Quinn deserves the job.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're definitely right like that. He definitely deserved to be elevated. But I guess Fisher doesn't see it that way. And he also, you want to see what Porzingis can give you. I mean, he could come in and do well against the top players, or he could just get totally beat up. And we're going to find out, right? I mean, you know, you can also add O'Quinn later on if you need to elevate him, or maybe Derek Williams instead. Maybe O'Quinn is set in that spot, and they don't want to move him around. They don't want to screw with him.
Yeah, but I would hate for Porzingis to struggle early and then for Fisher to have to make a change, which could kind of affect his confidence. You know, as opposed to the NBA,
you're totally right.
This is a man's league now,
It sure is.
I think the positives, you guys all make great points. I think that the Knicks should also be looking at it in the sense that, let's give Porzingis, we're not going to give him more than 20 minutes a game. Just because he's starting doesn't mean he's going to be the guy that's going to close games. But what we want to get him is that experience against the top power forwards and centers in the league. You know, we want to give him the experience as a rookie of playing against the best of the best in terms of starting lineups. Also, what they might think that he provides is a better interior defense in terms of being able to block shots alongside Lopez. He's got that mobility down. He'll learn. And being able to have that backup in Lopez to help protect the rim in case some mistakes happen there is also, it's more comfortable. It's less stressful because you could rely on Carmelo scoring. You don't have to be the guy to do all the scoring. And another component for Carmelo is that we have all seen when Carmelo Anthony has knockdown shooters surrounding him, the Knicks are better. Carmelo Anthony is better because you cannot double team if he's going to make one pass to Porzingis, who's going to then, you know, say there's a closeout which he could attack. We saw him do that. Or he makes a pass to an open 40% three-point shooter in Calderon or a follow. So these are, you're looking at Calderon and Fowler, two 40% three-point shooters. Lopez is going to hit the three, but he can hit the mid-range. And then you've got Porzingis, who can stretch the floor. So you got three guys that can shoot from deep surrounding Carmelo, which makes him even more dangerous. So teams have to think twice about doubling Carmelo, and that's what I think is really the difference there. That's just, you know, my thought on that.
Yeah, so you know what? I agree with everything you said. I mean, what everybody's saying here, I mean, there's positives and negatives to both ends, right?
Right.
I think it's more positive than negative because what you just said, Sean, about, you know, stretching the floor for Melo and opening up lanes for people with great shooting. And you also want to have these two guys gain chemistry. We don't want to see that whole Amari Melo thing where they play on separate units. I don't want to see that stuff. I want to see Porzingis mix it in there and get some minutes. And, you know, I'm hoping for the best. And he's got a lot of confidence, the kid. So, I think that his confidence is not going to be shaken as much as some other players, but like Greg said, it's a man's league, and things can change quickly, and he can get taken to. You know, I'm trying to think about players that he's going to play against, like a Bosch and maybe a Mirotić and guys like that. I mean, are they going to take it? Are they just going to use him because he's a rookie? I mean, he's going to probably take him a full turn around the league. You know, play every team and just to see what he can do. He's gonna have. Right. I mean, he's young. He's gonna have to get used to it. It's not gonna be easy. The travel, everything. You know, it's not gonna be easy, and it should be interesting. And I'm looking forward to it. I want to see him develop, though. I want to see him develop into a total star.
Yeah,
for sure.
Now let's talk about the bench. What I like about the depth of the Knicks is that you got Calderon and Lopez, who have typically not played more than 30 minutes a game. On average, Lopez has averaged 26 minutes a game. I wouldn't want him to play more than 28 or 30, even though he's good, because I don't want him to get hurt. I want to make sure you could rest him. Plus, you have either O'Quinn or Serafin that could play the five as well. And so, therefore, I'm thinking in a 48-minute span, say we're thinking 48 minutes, if you play, you know, if you're playing Lopez 26, 28 minutes, you have another 20 minutes for O'Quinn penciled in there, or say you give 20 minutes to Serafin. The power forward spot for me would be, for me, this is what I would do. There's two lineups. It's a big lineup, which I would go with Serafin, O'Quinn, Derek Williams, Grant, and Galloway. Then there's the small lineup. The small lineup, I put O'Quinn at the five. I play Derek Williams at the four. I play Sasha at the three. And then I do Grant and Galloway at the two guards. And if Early keeps on showing, then maybe Early could play the three and Derek Williams could play the four alongside O'Quinn at the five and Sasha's out. But I just want to see a little bit more from Klee. But the point is the Knicks have that flexibility in the second unit to play big with Serafin and O'Quinn or small with Derek Williams at the four and O'Quinn at the five. You guys are around. You guys have the same type of thinking in terms of the rotation there?
Go ahead. No, I was thinking along the lines of maybe a Flalo at the three, Galloway at the two, that sort of thing. But still, like you said, there's so many interchangeable parts. You know, there's a lot of players that can play different positions. So that's one thing that I like about the roster that Phil Jackson put together. He put, you know, we got enough bigs, we got some wing players, and we have a complement of guards. And some of these guys could play the two and the three. So, could definitely, you could go different ways with it, which is good because depending on the matchups, you want to be able to match up. So, seems like it could be interesting.
That's perfect.
You got your core guys, right? That's the most important. And then you have guys that are on this side, then you have guys on the other side. You can go either way you want. They're so versatile with Derek Williams. Obviously, O'Quinn's going to be a big part of the team, power forward center. When Porzingis or Lopez comes out, you can stay big with Serafin. You can bring in Klee Anthony if you really want to go small and put Melo at the power. Or when Melo comes out, you can bring in Klee Anthony, or you can go Derek Williams, who can play power forward and small forward and be a go-to guy in the second unit. Same thing with the guards. I mean, you can bring in just Galloway and Afalo. You can bring in Galloway for Calderon. You can bring in Grant for Calderon. You can play those two guys together, the two young guys together. I mean, there's so many different ways. Certain nights that guys won't play as much, but he has the option. That's the thing. He has the option to do every. Like Phil Jackson said, it's going to be up to Derek to handle the minutes he's going to give out and who's going to play on a nightly basis because he has the options right now. I think this team can really be a lot better than people think. I really do. I mean, just look at them, how they're constructed. I mean, I know preseason is just preseason, but they had a good preseason. I mean, they really took it to a couple teams. It was surprising, especially Washington, that second game. Like, they were going against most of the starters on Washington. They brought it now. You know, the regular season is totally different, and, you know, they can't be shell-shocked, but this is not the same team we've seen. So this is a new style team, gritty team, defensive team, and they got a lot of pros. And that's the key. And I really think that they could be a decent team. I don't want to get crazy, you know, but I think they could be a good team. I think they'll be a lot better than people think. If you use the example of the preseason rotation and the guys who are stepping up, I'd be surprised if they were bad. I really would be.
I think that's a. Oh, sorry, Greg. My fault.
I was just going to say it's really, you know, the sky's the limit. I mean, there's opportunity in the Eastern Conference, especially, you know, toward the bottom when you look at this seventh, eighth, ninth spot, you know, trying to, you know, creep into that eighth spot, you know, they're going to be fighting it out with, you know, probably the Celtics, Pacers, Pistons, you know, teams like that. So, you know, I think they can match up with those teams. It's going to be a question of can they beat them out?
Yeah.
But don't they feel like a better team than those teams you just mentioned?
Well, we're going to get into that right now. That's what I was going to say. It's a perfect segue to our preview because that's exactly what I want to talk about. I want to talk about each conference, but we can start with the East, and we talk about what five teams are prognosticators saying. These are the five teams that are going to be battling for the last playoff spot. So we can look at those teams, the Pacers, the Magic, the Pistons, Celtics, and compare them against the Knicks. So let's go ahead and do that. By the way, everybody, you're listening to the Knicks and I podcast with Sean, Pete, and Greg. Let's get right into it. So the Eastern Conference, let's start off from the eighth seed. Let's talk about all the teams that are rumored to be part of that.
Why don't we take it from the top to the bottom, Sean?
Okay, let's do that. Okay, so, who wants to go first? Who wants to give their top eight first?
You guys can go first.
All right, I'll go first.
All right, go for it.
All right, I got the Cavs. Obviously, I think that, you know, I think even though they may get off to a slow start with, you know, with the injuries they have right now and, you know, with the contract situation with Tristan Thompson and Kevin Love coming off the shoulder surgery, and LeBron, I guess he got an injection in his back, I think last week or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
But, I mean, overall, they got the talent. But the Cavs, you know, they're built to make another title run. So I got the Cavs as my number one seed in the East. And then the Chicago Bulls. I still think the Bulls are right there. I thought the Bulls actually had a better team than the Cavs last year, but they just couldn't get over the hump. You know, they just didn't have the mental toughness to get over the hump. And then there's always the Derrick Rose situation with them. You don't know which one you're going to get. So, but, you know, with Jimmy Butler coming off his stellar season, you know, I don't see him taking a step back. I see him as legit, you know, with Jimmy Butler and, of course, with Powell and Taj Gibson. They got bigs up front, you know, a very versatile team. Bulls are second. And then I got the Hawks taking a slide. They won't win 60 games this year. You know, I mean, you know, Damari Carroll, they let him go. You know, I'm not going to say last year was a fluke. Everything just broke right for them last year. But I still see them being a 50-win team, you know.
Okay.
You know, they still got Horford. They still got Teague. They still got, you know, the bulk of their core is still intact. And Budenholzer, you know, he proved to be an outstanding coach last year. I like the way they move the ball. They shoot a lot of open shots. You know, they shoot a lot of threes, which I know you like shooting.
Right. Oh,
so,
yeah.
So I got them third, and then I'm going with the Heat. I know there's a lot of people who question, you know, whether Dwayne Wade can stay healthy. But I think that their starting five is probably one of the best starting fives out there. When you look at with Dragic and Wade and Deng as your small forward, and with Bosch coming back, I assume that he's healthy, and Whiteside, who was a beast last year, if he could continue to progress, looks like they have a nice starting unit. I mean, they added a bunch of no defensive guys off their bench. They added Amari and Gerald Green, right? So, I mean, they might take a little bit of a step back on the defensive end when they go to their bench. But these guys can score. I mean, sometimes you got to balance your roster out. It's not all about having all defensive guys and all offensive guys. You got to have that blend. So I think, you know, I think those guys could contribute something coming off the bench. So I have them fourth. Then I have the Wizards. I still think the Wizards are formidable. You know, John Wall and Bradley Beal. They're going to miss Paul Pierce, who was definitely an influence on the younger guys. But I think it's time those guys got to step up. you know, Wall and Beal, they got to step up and be top flight performers when it counts. And they're going to look for Otto Porter this year. He was a high draft pick, and try to take that next step. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with him. Then we go to the Raptors sixth. You know, I still think they're pretty good. They lost Amir Johnson, which is going to be a hit, but they did pick up Carroll. You know, so he should help them out. And Kyle Lowry is looking excellent. I mean, you know, he came back in great shape. He seemed like he wore down toward the end of the season. I'm looking for big things from Kyle Lowry. I still think the Raptors will be on top of the Atlantic. And then we go to the Milwaukee Bucks, Sean's favorite team.
Yes. Oh, God.
With the addition of, first of all, let me just say that last year they were one of the best defensive teams in the NBA. So now they add Greg Monroe, who's not a great defender, but he can score in the low box, something that they didn't have. He can get you 18 and 10. Right, so you throw him in the mix, and they still have that defensive philosophy. Jason Kidd is not going to give that up, you know. And they picked up Chris Copeland, somebody who could stretch the floor. He should help them out. And then they're bringing back Parker. They're bringing back Parker, who didn't play all last year. You know, that's like adding a lottery pick. So,
yeah.
I like the Bucks. The Bucks, what did they win, 41 games last year?
Yeah, I think so.
To win somewhere like 45 to make, you know, keep gradual improvement. And then for that eighth spot, I'm going with the Celtics. I mean, the Celtics, they're a well-coached team. I like their coach. Brad Stevens is a great young coach. They picked up former Nick David Lee, who should give them some inside play. I mean, he grabbed some rebounds. Somebody, you know, he's still a double-double guy. I mean, you know, last year he got hurt and then, you know, due to the circumstances, Draymond Green took his spot, and he just came off the bench. He was a good soldier, got his championship ring. Their guard play, I just think the difference between them and us is that I just think the Celtics with Marcus Smart and with, you know, with their guards, Turner and those guys, I think that, you know, that's something that will be tough for us to overcome. But that's my eight right there. And then we're in the mix, depending on what we do. You know, I got us at 35 wins, and we could creep up near the 40, 41 win mark. We could easily get in. So that's what it's going to be.
All right.
See what kind of improvement that we get.
So what do you got, Pete? What do you got then for hearing that?
Well, let me say this. Cleveland, obviously, number one. I think anything after that is unknown. I think a lot of
You got to give it to us, man.
No, I'll give it to you. I'm just giving you a little prefix
here.
Come on,
Pete. I'm just busting balls.
I really think it's wide open. So I'm going to give you some stuff, but I really think wide open. I think, obviously, Cleveland. I'm going to go Chicago second, but they have a new coach. You don't know. You never know what's going to happen. And the defense could be not as good, but their offense could be better. So
True.
Sure.
Atlanta. I would put Atlanta in there as well. But, once again, they lost to Amari Carroll last year. Could have been a fluke. We don't know. I mean, most teams, nobody predicted that they were going to be that good last year. So, I mean, they could fall down this year. But I'll put them third. Fourth, I think I want to go with Washington. They're pretty solid, and they're well coached. And they have good chemistry together at this point. Number five, I'm going to go Toronto. They're well coached as well, and they picked up Damari Carroll. I like that move. Number six, I have to go Miami. I really don't want to go Miami, but I'll do it. I'm not a big fan of their defensive team at this point with Amari, like you said, Greg Gerald. And you just don't know with Wade, even though he had a decent year last year. And, of course, Bosch was out, so he's a question mark as well. And Whiteside, you never know with him. He could implode. So where am I at? I think the Knicks will be seven. I really do. I think Knicks are going to be better than people think.
Okay.
Surprise a lot of people, and it's going to freak everybody out, especially the media. And we're all going to laugh about it. And number eight, I think Boston and Detroit's going to battle for it. I think Boston will probably get it, but I'll never count out a Stan Van Gundy team. I love Stanley Johnson. I liked when they picked him up. I think they could be, and they have, of course, they have Drummond, who's a beast. Not sold on Reggie Jackson, so, but he's going to have them competing. I also just think that the Knicks are better than those two teams I just said. I think they'll be a seven seed. And Knicks could go a little higher as well. I mean,
what?
You know,
come on.
I don't know if Miami even can do what we think. You know, I don't know if they can withstand the whole season as with this team. So, you know, Knicks could climb. I'm being optimistic, though.
And why don't the Bucks make the playoffs? What?
I said the Bucks. Yeah, no, the Bucks have to make the playoffs. I'm sorry.
All right,
they're
so you
got to
take somebody out. So Bucks are eight, and the Bucks.
Yeah, that's
and
not
Detroit
easy to take. I mean,
Boston
I hate to
and
kick
Detroit
the
are fighting. I got you. No,
yeah,
sorry,
I hate to
ahead.
Kick the Knicks down to eighth spot, but I forgot I'm Milwaukee. So yeah, I would probably put Milwaukee at the seven and kick the Knicks down to eight. And let the other two teams battle the Knicks. I think the Knicks are better than those two teams. And
okay.
I'm not a big fan of Milwaukee, to be honest with you. But they are a good defensive team. And Jason Kidd's a good coach. And, you know, Parker's
mm-hmm.
going to have a whole rookie season pretty much because he was out last year. And Monroe's a good pickup. He's a good 17 and 12 guy. I mean, he can give you some great nights. Not great defensively. But I think Jason Kidd has that team way in the right direction from one year to another. And, you know, like I said before, I mean, it's hard to pinpoint 1-8 in preseason, but any
mm-hmm.
of these teams can climb or fall. You know, Toronto
yep.
could drop. I mean, anybody
True.
Can go up and down. So it's very
True.
Difficult. After Cleveland, it's difficult. It really is.
Yep. You don't
Especially
know.
Especially the top, like, four.
All right.
Nope.
All right. Well, I mean, this was definitely tough. Like you said, I think it's all open. Here are my top. I got Cleveland number one. I got the Wizards number two. The reason I have the Wizards is because it sounds like they're embracing a wide open space, doing what they do best, which is high pick and roll with John Wall, spreading the floor with shooters like Bradley Beal, Otto Porter showing the ability, Markel Webster are their threes and fours. Even Humphries and N.A. can shoot from the mid-range, which is helpful. They still got Gortat down there if they needed some post presence. So I like the way the Wizards are set up. And I think John Wall, getting to 25 years old, he's now at his apex, at his peak. He already led the league in assists, and I think he's going to have a near MVP-type season, which is unfortunate because I think that really does make Washington a little more attractive for Kevin Durant. That being said, if Durant is healthy, Westbrook's healthy, I think Durant's staying in OKC, but that's besides the point. I like the Wizards there because they're changing their philosophy. Third, I like the Bulls. I like the Bulls there because they still have a very loaded roster. That being said, if Derrick Rose goes down, I don't know because Tom Thibodeau, for some reason, was able to get backup point guards to play better than they are. But now they got a new coach, and they're still relying on Aaron Brooks to run the show. And Derrick Rose is obviously very injury-prone. That is a major unknown. Here's another unknown. Pau Gasol was unbelievably healthy last year after 2 years ago being almost hurt the entire year under D'Antoni. He's 35 years old. Taj Gibson may be unhappy. Joakim Noah's always injured. I'm putting the Bulls there third, but with a lot of reservations because it's a first-time coach. How is he going to adapt to the injuries? But that being said, I expect Nir Mirotić to be better, Tony Snell to be better, and Doug McDermott to be better. So therefore, I think that balanced out and put Chicago in the third seed. Fourth, I think Jamari Carroll hurts. That being said, adding Thiago Splitter is a major addition for Atlanta. Gives
yep.
Al Horford the ability to play a little bit more 4 and 5. So they could kind of play the way Duncan and Splitter played in terms of, you know, two bigs that could pass the ball on post and hit from the mid-range. So I like the Hawks to do that, though I think they have serious concerns taking, you know, defensively, even though they were a top 10 defensive team last year. But, you know, they went from I think they won 38 games the year before to a 60-plus win team last year. So if the Hawks did it, you know, you got to respect that. So I put them there. Now, the Raptors, they struggled the second half of the year. They got, you know, they looked like they were losing a lot. They lost the heart of their defense in terms of Amir Johnson, who went to Boston. So I think the Raptors still ended up winning the Atlantic Division because I think the Knicks are going to start out slow. And the Celtics are still, you know, have to figure out the rotation. They have so many guys that can play. But at the end of the day, you have, like you said, Greg, Kyle Lowry looks unbelievable. He's in shape. He looks focused. This is a big year for DeMar DeRozan because they might try to trade him. They have to decide if they want to re-sign to a long-term big money deal. So he's going to have to become a more efficient player. Right now he's shooting in the, you know, very low 40 percentile, which means he's got bad shot selection. Another wing, Terrence Ross, a kid who has immense upside talent-wise, but has he been able to develop an outside jump shot? His three-point shooting has gotten better, but how is he defensively? Big question mark. And then Jonas Valanciunas is now going to be the guy, you know, the captain of the defense. Is he up to the task as a young big? We'll see. The set six, I got the Bucks at six because at the end of the day, they were the second best defensive efficiency team in the NBA last year. I think adding Greg Monroe will drop their defense alone. Just doing that is going to drop their defense to maybe 8 or 9 or 10 because that Zaza Pachulia is still a better defensive center than Greg Monroe. I think Jabari Parker is still a very bad defender. Before he got hurt, he was a bad defender. I think that what happens is you're going to move the ball around the floor and you're going to be kicking out to a guy like Giannis, who shot under 15% from three. Michael Carter-Williams, a guy who shot under 20% from three. You're not going to be able to space the floor, but I think you're going to be able to make some nifty passes. You're going to have some cutters. Jason Kidd's a smart coach. He's proven it. I expect them to figure out a way. They have too much talent there to not be a playoff team, in my estimation. But are they a good team? They still, to me, can't shoot. I know they added, you know, Jared Bayless is there already. I know they added some other guys that could stretch the floor, Grevis Vasquez. But Vasquez is another guy who can't play defense. So Kidd's going to have to do a lot of mixing and matching. They went from 17 wins to 41. Pretty much something like that. So
remember they picked up Copeland.
Again, if you can't play defense, I don't know if a kid's going to play you. And Copeland, we'll see. You know, they got a lot of guys. They're deep. They're 15 deep. And I don't know if you can expect OJ Mayo to have another good year. He's another guy who's been up and down throughout his career. So a lot of question marks. At seventh, I'm putting the Knicks at seven, and I'm putting the Knicks at seven because I think it's a system that fits Carmelo. I think you've already seen it. I think he learned a lot from watching from the sidelines. I think he's going to have, if, you know, barring injury, I think he's going to have the bounce back season. I think he's already becoming a leader in a lot of different ways. I think the Knicks now have the necessary floor spacing. I think you have a defensive anchor in Robin Lopez. I think you have a shooting guard that could shoot better than J.R. Smith and Amon Shumpert and play maybe not as good defense as Amon Shumpert at his peak, but he could play average defense when Amon Shumpert played average defense. I think the depth that you have is huge. I think it's huge. I think the Knicks have as much depth as the Celtics do. They're 9 deep, maybe 11 deep if you count Serafin and Klay Anthony early, and that's not including Sasha Vujicic, I don't know. But I think you're 9 deep because I consider Galloway, Grant, Derek Williams, and Kyle Quinn as the four guys off the bench that are rotation NBA players. Last year, the Knicks had 3 maybe rotation NBA players. Last year, their bigs were Andrea Bargnani, Amari Stoudemire, Cole Aldrich, Jason Smith, and Quincy Acey. Those guys are not going to see NBA minutes more than 15 minutes a game this year. They're not. The Amari may play 20, maximum. Jason Smith may play 20. But under Scott Skiles, there's no way Jason Smith is going to play more than 20 minutes a game. So I think that the Knicks had one of the worst teams. Big Lou was also a guy who started every game. Guess what? He's a 14th guy right now. You know? So the Knicks are a completely different team. It's not fair to say that they can't make the leap from 17 to 41 because the team is completely different. The only guys still there are Calderon, Galloway, and Melo. And Calderon missed more than half a year. Carmelo missed, you know, 40-something, 50 games. And Galloway was a rookie who spent the first half of the season in the D-League. And Lou Amundson and Lance Thomas came in the last 2 months of the season. It's not the same team. And that's why I think the Knicks are going to be there. I think Boston, I think adding David Lee, who's a defensive thief, he's not a good defensive player at all. He was nearly unplayable. He'll also start as a veteran leader, but I don't think he's going to play more than 20, 25 minutes. And I think the Celtics, you know, they still don't have a guy that they can score. And I think that they got in because the rest of the East was so bad. But I agree, the Knicks are going to be better. The Pistons are going to be better. The Magic are going to be better with Scott Skiles, I think. I think that the Pistons are going to be way better. I think Reggie Jackson got a handle at the end of the year, and I think they're gonna be pushing. And a lot of those wins the Celtics had towards the end of the year, guess what? They're not going to have them. They're going to have a good team. So I like the Celtics to make the playoffs in the eighth spot. So, yeah, I have Miami not making the playoffs. And I know that. And the reason I do is because Luol Deng gets hurt a lot. Dwayne Wade gets hurt a lot. God forbid something happens to Chris Bosh. Hassan Whiteside is a lunatic who can get suspended at any time for something stupid. Josh McRoberts has always been injury prone. Even if Amari gives him something good offensively, guess what? He's always injury prone. Mario Chalmers is a fine backup point guard. Justice Winslow is solid as a backup, forward. But Dwayne Wade hasn't played more than 55 games in the last 4 years. So Dragic is a huge upgrade. But even with Dragic, Miami didn't improve after the trade. Spoelstra is a great, smart coach. But I just think that there's so many question marks to that team.
They didn't have Bosh. That's why they didn't improve after.
As
soon as they got him, Bosh went out. So I don't know.
Right. Well, Bosh is out. And that's my point, is that you have guys that are very injury prone on that team, and I just don't know how that's going to react. Where I feel like the other teams are more solid. I think the Bucks are better. I think the Celtics are better. I just think they're better. I don't know. That's it. I think it's going to be close, but I just think that Miami still, at the end of the day, if Chris Bosh goes out, who are they going to start at power forward? Amari Stoudemire or Josh McRoberts? And what if they're hurt? You literally have every position as a position of people that typically get hurt, except for Dragic and Whiteside, who also played half the season. And now he's going to be, just because he averaged enough blocks in 40 games, he's going to be the guy that's going to, hold the team together. Miami, was the 19th ranked defense last year. So they were nearly a bottom 10 defense. So I don't see what they did to get better defensively at all. The Knicks, to me, they got a rim protector in Lopez, who's up there among the DeAndre Jordans, the Marco Souls of the league, who defend the rim. He's one of the top five rim protectors in the league, not by blocks, but by other metrics. So I think and with Kyle Quinn, I think that he was also a very underrated defender. I think the Knicks are a superior team defensively over Miami to me. But
not talent-wise.
Anyway.
Defensively, talent-wise. You got two top 20 players in the league on Miami. You telling me the Knicks is going to be better than Miami? What you smoking, huh?
Yeah. I don't know, man.
Yeah, but you know what? Look at Atlanta last year. Don't expect them to do anything. Maybe compete for the eighth spot. They don't have a star, and look what they did. So, we're all friends here. We're just talking shit, and that's fine. But nobody knows. Not even the smartest basketball analyst on ESPN, if you want to even say that. They don't know. I mean, what did they predict last year for Milwaukee? What was the over-under for Milwaukee last year in preseason? What did Howard Beck and all these clowns, what do they all have to say? the Golden State guy. What's his name? He's on TNT sometimes.
Golden State guy.
No, he does the Golden State games once in a while. He's located out there. He was on Bleacher Report today with Howard Beck, him, and Greg Anthony, and they did the season preview for the Knicks. Forget his name. Oh, God. It doesn't matter. But what do they predict? Were they predicting that they're going to win 41 games? I highly doubt it. So why can't we jump? Miami could totally drop. Atlanta could drop.
I could.
Someone's going to be good, someone's going to be bad, and someone's going to be right where we think they're going to be. Not everybody could be up and coming. Someone's going to take a step down. They have to, and it could be Miami. It could be anybody. It could be Atlanta.
That's the fun of it. That's the fun of it. Nobody knows.
Yeah.
So they think they know, but
they don't know.
Yep.
What's that guy's name, man? Oh, God, got like almost reddish hair. Not Craig. Craig something? No.
Oh, Bjelica?
Yeah,
Buker?
Rick Buker.
Yeah, Buker.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. He was like, he was laughing at Greg Anthony today. I was watching this thing, and Anthony said it's not – he was defending Dolan, that Dolan hired all the right people over the years, just things haven't worked out. And he was laughing, saying, I can't believe you're defending Dolan. The Knicks are not going to make the playoffs. They're not ready. He would trade Carmelo right now. They should have done it. Should have traded him already. I had to turn it off. I couldn't watch it anymore. It was just bash the Knicks day. I can't take it.
Well, Bleacher Report predicted the Bucks. Let's see where they predict the Bucks. Oh, man. I don't want to look at it. They're making me go through a friggin' slideshow. No, they had them predicted at as a 21 team last year. So
there you go.
As Bleacher
there
Report.
There you go right there. It's easy to predict down. And then when the team is good, they can say, oh, they're a surprise of the league.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I guess you guys got the – got the Knicks seventh, right?
And
I wanted to go higher, but I want to get yelled
at. I have them battling for the eighth spot. I have them ninth, contingent on how they do, and hopefully sliding into that eighth spot. So, you know, I guess we'll have to, you know, sit back. Should be an exciting season. I mean, these guys, at least they're playing together as a team. We have an NBA roster now, at least.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like last year where we had a bunch of guys.
The journey's the best part, right?
Yep. So it's going to be fun. I can't wait. I can't wait till next week.
I can't wait to beat the Bucks on opening night, man. I just cannot wait for that. I cannot freaking wait.
They're going to rough first month, man. Real rough.
Yeah, I know. So, okay, we could jump into the Western Conference and just briefly go through that, or we could just save it for next Tuesday. What do you guys want to do?
Save it for next Tuesday, because that's going to be a whole breakdown, like how we did for the East. We're up against it. We don't have enough time for all of that.
Yeah, I agree.
Does that work? Yeah. All right, let's do it then. Yeah. All right. Next Tuesday, same time, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific time. We'll be back. This is the Nick Tonight podcast. You can follow us at Twitter. Go ahead, Greg. You're at Cheestrong011. Pete, what's your Twitter handle again? I always forget.
It's Pete_Swag. SWAG.
All right, there you go. And I am at SAquino34. Please subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher if you want to listen to more. We've been doing this for about 3 years, so there are a bunch of old podcasts you guys could listen to. We've had interviews with Larry Kuhn, Chris Herring, Mark Berman, a lot of the Nick writers, and other national writers as well, like I think Howard Beck's been on the show before too, Tommy Beer, a bunch of other cool guys. So feel free to download our podcast. Thank you very much for listening. We'll talk to you guys next Tuesday for the Western Conference preview, one night before the Knicks open up in Milwaukee. We'll talk to you guys next Tuesday. Good night, everybody.
Later, boys.
Later.